Welcome to the Monster Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world got crazy. Well, I heard Biden was a loser. I mean, look, Joe never got one.
And now, your hosts.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I have good news and bad news. We'll start with the bad news. The bad news is for the duration of today slash tonight's episode, you're stuck with me, your sometimes co-host, Jack DeVinny. Mr. Welline is doing well. His duties running an ICU or participating in the operations of an ICU in Metro Denver obviously have him a bit preoccupied given, well, COVID-19, the emergence of the heretofore unseen coronavirus. He's doing well, but and definitely sends his regards, but he will be unable to participate in this particular episode. The good news is, not only will Mr. Welline be returning to us soon, but I've got a cadre of very special guests lined up for us in the next few episodes. One is someone that works in a very integral capacity in IT for a number of firms, a couple of whom he does the IT, some IT work for by the firm he's employed by, includes the ACLU and Planned Parenthood. Someone close to me, Mr. Jared Nix, at some point he will be joining us in the next week, as will a newcomer both to our editorial and multimedia staff, my older brother, Michael DeVinny, who, long story short, 12 years older than me and got a degree in criminal justice. I think he graduated sometime around when I was 10 years old, and I'm sure he appreciates that comparison being made. But regardless, he's one of the individuals who inspired me a long time ago as a 16, 17-year-old. Here I am, 35, going on 36. But as a 16, 17-year-old, he inspired me to take seriously my civic duties and to participate in discussion and non-ad hominem, non-personal debate. And it's something that this country goes wanting for more and more, and it's definitely something we need to return to. And so I feel like it's rather apropos to see him finally coming into the fold. He'll be introducing himself by way of editorial and podcast episode. I'm not sure which he intends to come out with first, but I suppose that's part of the charm, going to keep us guessing on that front. But aside from those two, we do have some surprise guests planned, and not just for the podcast, but also on the editorial front. But in the meantime, a bit of, as Nate would call it, housekeeping, and I do so apologize, folks. I'm nowhere near the host that he is, but I hope to fill in relatively well in the meantime. But a bit of housekeeping, as Mr. Welline would put it, and wherever you were listening from, be it the United States of America, where a solid 60%+ of our listenership comes from, or from over in Western Europe, France gives us a solid 35, nearly 40% at times of our listenership, and we thank you for your presence with us, as always. Vive la France. And also to our listeners from the Far East, we have listeners from Hong Kong, South Korea, occasionally from the People's Republic of China. We wish you all well and hope that you're coping with the coronavirus a bit better than we are. We're a bit behind here in the United States, as you may well know, for varying reasons, which we can get into again, which I'm sure we will. But in the meantime, again, wherever you're listening to us from, be it via our server itself on Pandora, or excuse me, on Podomatic.com, or whether you're listening from a service such as, yes, Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Music, Stitcher, regardless, or if you're going to modstate.com itself, regardless, thank you, as always, and we hope that whatever we've done to make you stick around keeps you sticking around, and I hope that some of the new things that we're coming out with, that's a bit of the better news, is that with our four-year anniversary as a magazine, as an editorial publication approaching on April 30th, and the podcast was launched itself in, I believe, June or July. Nate, if he was here, would correct me, but it's June or July 2017 is when the podcast launched. But the editorial, the main publication itself, launched on 30 April 2016. And so that anniversary is coming up. And to celebrate that a bit, not only are we, again, expanding in terms of filling out, finally rounding out the editorial roster and making a push this election year, but also we've got some new programs coming to you by way of podcasting, and some of that will extend, yes, to our long maligned YouTube channel. We've been promising, we've been threatening to bring that back for forever now, and it just hasn't happened. Well, finally looks to be coming about, and so that's part of the better news we have, is that, yes, there's been a bit of a dearth of our reaching out to you lately, and I, again, apologize in my own tardiness in doing what Mr. Willon said we needed to do a while ago, and that was me go ahead and start hosting the program in lieu of his being able to be involved. Again, he sends his best regards, but is a bit preoccupied fighting the good fight on the front lines there in Denver, Colorado. And Nate, to you and your lovely wife, Sarah, we send you our absolute best from here in the GNO, the greater New Orleans area. And we're in a bit of a pickle here ourselves, as it were. So with that, thank you again for tuning in. And so a bit of a rundown of what I hope to get to in a timely manner tonight. May not happen, all of it, because, again, I know you're not really looking forward to me droning on for forever, and I'm not going to do that to you. But with housekeeping and our many fine thanks out of the way to our many wonderful listeners from varying locales and various platforms, a couple of things I want to hit on. Obviously, the president now knows who his opponent on the Democratic Party ticket will be, at least the presidential nominee, as it were, barring any unforeseen dropouts or, God forbid, health issues. Vice President Joe Biden, Democrat from Pennsylvania, will be atop the Democratic ticket to face Republican of Florida, Donald Trump, in November 2020. So it's the long, I had long said that we were looking out for this one to see if, in fact, we were going to see Joe, this is a big effing deal, Biden, versus Donald grabbing him by the meow, Trump. Well, indeed it is. And so, as I've said before, well, it could be Natalie Portman and Jessica Alba and Nighty saying, hey, we're ready for snuggle time, Jack. And it's, well, I'm sorry, ladies, but Biden-Trump is on. First debate, second debate, third, doesn't matter. I hope they do 30 of them. Not really. I hope they do as many as they can stand. It'll be interesting to see how they work those out with social distancing. I don't imagine those will be done remotely, because I think they'd be, wait a minute, I couldn't hear you. You're breaking up. And then it would just become a cluster. So I hope that they avoid that altogether. Let's forego that and simply say we're going to exercise social distancing when the two candidates are finally in the same room. And I'm just kidding. To our female listeners out there, it's just a joke. Number one, Natalie Portman and Jessica Alba aren't going to be caught dead in 90s anywhere near where I live. Just a joke stating to state the importance of this debate. Basically, anyone and everyone should realize it's must-see TV, must-see streaming, whatever. And 2016, at least two out of the three presidential debates between Secretary of State Clinton and then entrepreneur or mogul Donald Trump, two of those three debates drew Super Bowl-sized audiences. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it wasn't because Hillary Clinton was participating. So you throw in someone who, I'm not going to say he's equally loose-lipped, but certainly capable of sinking his own ship with his own words. Vice President Biden certainly will add to the verbal fireworks, I think, to say the least. So it's going to be must-see regardless of whether it's on your television, PC, streaming, whatever. I think everybody's going to mark that down at the very least DVR it, but it's going to depend, I suppose, on, well, how quickly this lockdown ends, and a lot of that is going to depend on how well, this is in America, so wherever you are, it's going to depend for you on how well the citizens of your country cooperate with orders to stay home and to exercise social distancing. I see, as a bit of an example of this, I see individuals from my past that I look at on Instagram, and I see, oh yeah, we're, you know, this is the quarantine, and providing details on what they're doing, and there's lovely notes that they show for people that they can't see every day that they post, and that's wonderful. It's a beautiful sentiment, and that's great. And the next thing you know, the next couple of exhibits are examples of intermingling with people that they weren't originally isolated with. And I'm going, you're doing it wrong. That's not social distancing. That's not a quarantine. The whole idea is, you see, you're not going out unless it's a doctor's visit or to the grocery. And you're sure as hell not taking whatever bugs you have, whatever germs you have, whatever you may or may not have around other people that may be completely healthy, may not. That's the whole point of, quote, social distancing and quarantine. Doesn't mean posting notes for your peers and, hey, I miss you guys, folks in the ivory tower. I used to see you guys on the regular. That's such a sweet gesture. And then up, next thing you know, well, the quarantine's out the window and you and God knows how many people are congregated wherever. No. And I'm saying this as I'm from Metairie, but it's part of the greater New Orleans area. I'm saying this to ourselves, this business of second lines, which for those of you not from here, it originally started at funerals, but also includes wedding processions now, marching down the streets with a brass band. It's a big traditional affair. I'm not sure who was behind the one that happened the last two days that NOPD was unable to break up because they weren't using any serious force. But when it comes down, the order, be it from the governor of Louisiana, the mayor of New Orleans, or even, God forbid, the president of the United States, that no, we will quell these outbursts of civil disobedience. I just want you to know, I don't really feel sorry for you, whoever you are, whatever happens. I hope nothing bad happens. I hope that there's no extreme, excessive use of force. But we've been asked to do the right thing. And repeatedly, at least in our corner of the world, Americans seem unwilling to do so. Now, I'm picking on a population of over 325 million people based on the actions of a few. I get it. Probably a solid 80-85% of the American public is taking seriously, hey, unless you're going to the doctor or the grocery, etc., something along those lines, something serious you can't get around, then stay home. I look around and I see many of our neighbors doing that. I see many Americans playing ball. Then you got the ones who, I don't know, I'm not sure why you're buying an entire GMC Yukon full of toilet paper, because God knows, it's not like you're not leaving home. You're all on the roads. I don't understand the toilet paper thing. I mean, are you planning on never leaving home again? Somebody please write into us, whether it's on social media, we're on Facebook, we are on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on LinkedIn. Yes, we're on YouTube. Or you can email us, modstate@modstate.com. Please, please, please email us. Tell us what's up. Like, am I all wet? Am I completely wrong here? I've posted, if you've listened to this show, I've acknowledged when I've been wrong before. I'll do it again. So please let us know if we're off base here. But to me, please, somebody, if you know, explain the rationale behind buying every single plot of toilet paper that's in a Walmart, if you could. I've seen the folks that are loading up an SUV with it. It's like, are you planning on staying home until Christmas? Because I don't believe you. I see you all back on the road. So I don't know. When the order comes down from DC that, okay, we're going to have rationing, and now we're going to have price controls because we got folks charging $30 a pop for a container of Lysol on Amazon. I'm not kidding. When we have to have the federal government step in and enact price controls and rationing, That's why, because everyday Americans wouldn't do the right thing. And let me just go ahead and clear this up for you, because I heard tell of this. I'm not personally on Facebook anymore. I got off of Facebook in December of 2018, and I gotta tell you, it's one of the best things I've ever done. But as far as my inner peace, my peace of mind, oh my God, thank you for having what I saw as the strength of the time. Now it's like, how did I not get off of Facebook? But anyway, I digress daily. But the point being, I heard tell of this through my sister and my brother-in-law, of someone on Facebook who is numerous someone's who have questioned, well, even if they wanted to, I mean, the federal government can't tell me, you know, to stay home and to tell us to stay. Well, actually, yes, they can. I'm not going to sit here and read chapter and verse for you folks. I'll gladly put it in the show notes. But Wikipedia seems to be the ultimate way to look something up quickly. Or if you must use a search engine, I prefer you use Bing, BING.com. But if you must use CIA developed software, fine, Google it. But look up the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution. And also look up Article 1, Section 8. Which contains the Commerce Clause. And you may say, the Commerce Clause? Well, see, the Commerce Clause is a rather obscure part of the United States Constitution that is used to justify a lot of things. And this is where critics of the federal government and people I'm sure familiar with me are a bit flabbergasted right now, going, are you kidding me? That's how they regulate things. I'm not making this up. Things like swine, mental health, pre-slaughter, that's how they regulate it, through via the Commerce Clause. I'm using that as an example here, though. The Commerce Clause is rather broad. It's opaque, okay? But what it states, in short, is that whatsoever affects, if something affects interstate commerce to a degree, basically, that it ends up on the Fed's radar, in other words, whatever affects interstate commerce, they can regulate it. So with that, yes, they can tell you to stay home. And no, nobody's going to come. DHS isn't going to come yanking people, screaming babies from mother's breasts and church pews. They're not going to do that. You're going to go to church one Sunday and up, the doors are locked. And there's some corporal, and depending upon how bad this gets, it's a corporal in the National Guard or 82nd Airborne or 1st Marine Division. That's when you know things have really gotten bad, when it's regulars on the streets. But they're, turn around, sir. Turn around, ma'am. You're not gathering here. No. Gatherings of, you know, 5, 10, depending upon the state, or more are not allowed. Go home. There will be no church services held here today. There'll be no services held at the mosque, synagogue, whatever. That's how you're going to find out. It's not going to be some dramatic. People want the worst so they can act the worst, I swear. But the second item, after the president meeting his challenger, that I wanted to move on to, the second bullet point here is the federal response, which I kind of already got into. But yes, the response was delayed. We're 2 to 3 weeks behind much of the world. And in fact, that's kind of eerie to the degree to which our country in dealing with this pandemic has mirrored Italy. And that's another reason why I'm not so sure how long Americans are going to, of their own accord, peacefully comply with a stay-at-home order. I know the president is going to be under immense, incalculable political pressure to, on the 30th of April, to give in and say, look, we've got to reopen every part of the economy. Obviously, some of it, they don't have direct control over governors and mayors that have already said, no, look, we're shutting down. But the parts of the government, the port system, et al., that the Fed does have control over, the president is going to be under just a crucible of political pressure to go ahead and say, look, we need to open up fully to the extent we're able, the economy. That's obviously something, in my view, yes, I'm a laissez-faire capitalist to the degree I'm able. I embrace our mixed capitalist system because I'm all about making a profit as a private enterprise, as an entrepreneur. Entrepreneur myself, I'm rather egalitarian with it. I'm not really going to be content with this unless everybody involved is sharing in the spoils, if you will. But in terms of national framework, I am a believer in a mixed capitalist system. I look at our country and I look at the people that our way of doing things has lifted out of poverty. And I say, look, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. What we need now is serious reform. And so by that, what I mean is, look, our mixed capitalist system, yes, we do have an open market economy that depends upon private enterprise, small business. But we do have strong social programs that, following the Great Depression, kept a lot of people out of starvation. Okay? And we have programs that individuals I've been close with, I've known, as single mothers, have been able to get through school with, I believe it was SNAP, CHIP. I'm not sure, she could correct me, I'm sure, but there's multiple programs that we have that keep well-to-do Americans with food on the table during times, lesser times in their life, leaner times in their life, okay? And we all have those, and not everyone has a small $1 million loan from a family member to fall back on. So a little not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here would be merited, in my opinion. So the next bullet point I want to look at, and again, I may not be able to get to them all, but there's a fear among some less than leftist economic thinkers that, so is just one stimulus going to lead to another? We've already had two. Now we're talking about a third and a fourth, and we haven't even announced whether people are going back to work yet. Well, that's just it. If we are going to tell people to stay home, then it stands to reason that, okay, those are taxpayers. We're telling them to stay home and not work. Well, we need to make sure that they can pay their bills. And obviously, we're not going to be to depend upon landlords and banks to do the right thing and not go ahead with evictions and repos when they feel like the Fed's going to have to step in, because they didn't do the right thing in 2008 with the crisis that they, the financiers, helped create. Now, they had a lot of help with Congress, but the point is, middle America ended up paying anyway for the housing crisis. Whether we liked it or not, we were the ones that bailed out Lehman Brothers, etc. So this go round, let's avoid that and say, let's cut this whole thing off at the pass. And as long as we are telling people to stay home, then continue to provide the stimulus. Now, the question is how long. Okay, I understand there is a bit of foot tapping that goes on here. Remember, folks, we don't even know fully yet what we're dealing with. This didn't become a true recognized issue here in America until the second week of March. We're just now in the second week of April. Okay, let that sink in for a moment. Okay, now that leads into, I had it marked down as a fourth bullet point, but it could be a three bravo, whatever. But it was this concern amongst, again, non-leftist economic thinkers that were saying, okay, so if we support stimulus here, doesn't that mean that, you know, I'm kind of a betraying my beliefs in capitalism, or that, you know, I'm giving in to socialism, whatever? Look, stimulus to me does not mean that I'm wavering in my commitment to our mixed capitalist system. Stimulus says to me that I'm being a pragmatic idealist. My ideal is for us to be at maximum employment, for our standard of living to be improved, for our infrastructure to be upgraded so that our airports didn't look like that of a third world country, so over half of our bridges weren't crumbling and unsafe to drive on. Okay, my ideal is for us to be at the forefront of races for AI, the Internet of Things, blockchain. That's my ideal. And for companies like Alphabet, Google, Apple, Microsoft to want to do the right thing and say, you know what, rather than pay poverty level wages to foreign workers of our own volition, we're going to pack up shop and we're going to move back home. We're going to keep some facilities in the East, so per trade agreements, but we're going to spread those amongst Taiwan, South Korea, India, and also in the Western Hemisphere, Brazil. We're going to foster some new alliances with, or even existing ones, but we're going to have new trade agreements. And we are still going to have a foreign presence, but as a body politic, Alphabet/Google, Apple, Microsoft, and company, I'm picking on them, but they're big names that everybody can relate to, I hope. But of their own volition, saying, yeah, we're going to maintain some of these foreign presences, but we're going to bring over half of our foreign labor force home as a thank you to America that, made our companies great. Alphabet/Google, Apple, Microsoft, those names would not mean near what they mean, if anything, on the global stage without the very, very favorable place they were cradled growing up as little baby companies, okay? And that's in America, okay? Microsoft wouldn't be where they are today without the federal contract for Office and Windows that they've had. And we'll see if they hold on to the one for the cloud-based technology, which Amazon's protests are outrageous. But regardless, the point being, those companies all, just like you and I, owe the country we were born in something. I mean, as infants, can we honestly say that we had anything to do with the paving of roads or the provision of defense or the carrying out of the Clean Water Act? We see the opposite of that in Flint, Michigan. We have children now that have lost their eyesight because of lead poisoning because, I don't know, corporations thought it was okay to dump waste in the Flint River. So we see the antithesis of that. We see the lack of presence, lack of federal oversight. And I'm saying this as someone who has as his ideal an open market system, a private enterprise system, because I would challenge anyone to look at a state that was not based on that, where people will show me an established mega state that was established, where everything was centrally directed, where without external investment, people were lifted out of poverty. Hasn't happened. Now, China is a megastate, yes, where it's a centrally directed economy that, yes, of late have adopted capitalist reforms. But notice what I said there. Independent of outside investment. Lifted. China didn't do anything independent of outside investment, in case that's not become readily apparent. We learned very quickly who was more dependent upon whom. And I'll give you a hint. It wasn't America that was more dependent upon China. So, back to the topic, though. In and of itself, in its purest form, unfortunately, we see the need for regulation. But, again, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. In and of itself, what we have, our mixed capitalist system, is a beautiful thing. We've been able to lift untold millions, not just of Americans, but of other countries as well, out of poverty. Western Europe has followed very similar roadmap. Following World War II, yes, the Marshall Plan was centrally directed rebuilding, but it's an economy, European Union's, Great Britain's, that are based upon private enterprise. Not perhaps to the degree the United States is, but the song remains the same. But at the same time, we do need social aid programs to ensure that quite literally no one is left unfed, unclothed, unhoused, because we don't have enough individuals that apparently are willing to do the right thing. The state has to get involved. The state had to get involved to tell you, no, you can't just dump whatever filth you've been producing in your refinery into a municipal river, into a municipal water supply. We had to have that, okay? I'm in full recognition that the economy, that the mechanisms of production need oversight. Just as it's hard to believe, it wasn't until, 2014, 2015, somewhere in that vicinity, where for the very first time, we thought it might be a good idea to audit the Pentagon. First time ever. And what do we find but warehouses, Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, full of equipment for aircraft we haven't used in 4 decades. Brand new, though. Probably could get it for a song. So, what this means to me, to bring this all home as far as, what in God's holy name are you blathering about, man? Well, okay. The point of this is, we entered this whole crisis in terms that economists discuss, and it's discussed in economics classes and discussed in publications like Reuters, Bloomberg, etc., The Economist. that we entered this crisis in the worst possible way, with interest rates low and with deficits high. And that's not just in the United States. Interest rates in European Union, I'm not sure if they still are at this moment negative, were at some point, they might still be. The Bank of Japan still running negative interest rates. Now, it's a bit of an apples and oranges comparison to make. Say, well, should we do that in America? Look, Japan has long had a problem with the exact opposite of what Americans do. Japan has long had a problem with its citizens oversaving. They save too much. And so to stimulate their citizens to pulling money out of the bank, putting cash into the economy, generating revenue for firms, they said, okay, we're going to penalize you for keeping money in banks. Okay, we don't have that problem. Most Americans confess to not even having $500 saved away for a rainy day, for an emergency fund. So negative interest rates is a bad idea. And I don't think the president's going to get his wish. I hope he doesn't, with all due respect to him. We don't need negative interest rates here. What we need, in fact, are higher interest rates. If you can't afford to buy a home or a vehicle right now, you shouldn't be able to buy one. Sorry, you're not in healthy enough financial shape to do so. But interest rates need to go up, the deficit needs to go down, and in order to do that, I understand revenues have to be raised, and there's a number of ways to do that without reverting back to the age-old, oh, we're going to raise the income tax. Okay, if you really want to hit the upper income tiers in the United States of America, I'll give you a hint. The Mitt Romneys and the Sheldon Adelsons, the Bill Gates of the world, they're snickering to themselves when you talk about affecting how much they have by raising the income tax. They're laughing. Okay, go ahead and raise it to 90%. You're not hurting me. Not really. If you want to tap into that, then you've got to address capital gains tax. Now, I'm not going to lie and say there's a part of that that needs addressing, because I do highly resent the fact that I pay sales tax when I buy a vehicle and then I pay sales tax when I turn around and sell that very same vehicle. So I get it. There's flaws in it. But regardless of which way you want to go about it, whether it's a national sales tax, whether it's descheduling, legalizing, and regulating and taxing cannabis, whatever you want to do, whatever way, we're going to have to raise revenues. If I had my way, if you qualified, meaning you made 24 a year, 2K a month or more, you pay 15% as an individual, you pay 25% as a corporation. Yeah, I know that'd be a 4% rate increase in the tax rate. Still wouldn't be what it was, which it was the highest rate in the world when it was 33%, the highest corporate income tax rate in the world when it was 33%. 25% is not low. Just like 15% is not terribly low across the board for individuals, but that's just it. I would have a flat tax for both brackets. There'd be two brackets. Individual, 15%. Corporate, 25%. And there's no loopholes. And I'd get rid of the deduction for charitable contributions. Sorry, there are no more deductions. You can laugh at that, sneer at that all you want. I'll tell you this much. We'll find out who really wants to give to charity, who really means it, and who's just doing it for the tax deduction. But with that, again, recap, please hit us up, whether it's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. But even if it's just an email, modstate, modstate, at modstate, modstate.com. Please let us know. If nothing else, let us know what is up with the folks that have caused fights in the parking lot of Walmart, loading up entire SUVs full of toilet paper when nobody else can get any, and they seem to be okay with that. Is there anybody that can rationalize that? Is there any rationale behind this? Or is this just some sort of really bad variant of trolling? It's like, you know, troll better. But anyway, I promise you won't have to endure, I hope, no more episodes like this. But if you do, we'll have a guest in between. So, like, this was episode 219. 220, we'll have a special, I promise, very special guest. And then, worst case scenario, 221, it'll be back, just me. Maybe it'll be back in time. Who knows? But the point is, there won't be just episode after episode where you got to put up with Jack DeVinny. If there is another one, which is me, I'll have some more bullet points, have a little bit more of this fleshed out. Main thing was for us to stick our heads above water and say, no, we're still alive. We're regrouping. No, this is not only, we've said all along, election year is a big year for us. This is a big month for us. You're going to see. You're going to see Ezo cooking something up. But in the meantime, as Nate would have it, we'll do it this way. Until next time, au revoir.